For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way towards salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as in a cave. We invite you now to join us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle, Timothy O'Donnell, and Joseph Tomasian. Join us in the Catholic Cave.
All right, welcome to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Joseph Tomasian and Timothy O'Donnell. And can we be replaced? I mean, you know, in today's day and age, you know, I was driving in, I got cut off by a truck. Would that truck have cut me off if there weren't a driver behind it? If AI was operating.
Well, there are vehicles like that now.
I know, exactly. They've got driverless vehicles that can see better than human beings.
Yeah, like they don't fall asleep.
Exactly. And
Teslas
and,
are pretty amazing and, if you've been in one.
And I've got...
I don't fit in one.
You know, I've got to think...
I fit. You'll fit.
But I've got to think at some point they're going to come up with better cavemen than us.
I mean,
now that's a small leap for mankind. Okay, that's a small leap.
So you know, we have all this new technology, ChatGPT and OpenAI, and basically what it is it's an algorithm of language, right? You ask the question, and it gives this beautiful, perceived, well thought response to the question. But there's no thinking involved. It's all mathematics,
well,
right?
Okay, isn't thinking all just mathematics though? When you get down to it,
I would say most neurologists would say that they have no idea how the human brain works. So I don't know that we can call it math.
Yeah, and you've always got, with these questions, you've got the problem of the watcher, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so if you go through the psychology of sensation, right? So, you know, touch or sight, you know, you've got stimulus. The stimulus comes into your body either through your eyes or your fingers. It triggers neurons. Those neurons fire. The nerves go. It goes into your brain. The brain interprets it into images and ideas and all of that. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you can take this. You walk this back. But at some point, you have to have an observer of all this phenomena.
Right.
That's separate from the phenomena itself. And the question is what part of the human being is that observer? And then I guess more to the point, do robots have observers?
Yeah.
Is there a watcher behind AI? Is there a watcher behind that auto truck?
There is a watcher behind the AI. And so, example, right now, if you were to ask some questions like, how do I make napalm? Or how do I make a dirty bomb?
I ask that every day.
Naturally, yeah.
I'm more like, how do I get the stain out of my shirt?
So there are a group of people who are disengaging those response capacities, right? And so right now, artificial intelligence isn't sentient, right? It doesn't have the capacity for self-awareness or forward thinking as humans do. And it's an ontological leap to look at the superintelligence of artificial intelligence and say that it's going to ontologically be something different in the future. It's going to gain self-awareness, so, you know, Skynet, the Terminator style. That's a leap because right now it's
War
simply...
Games. That was another
right.
good one.
It's a mathematical. So that's far more likely than you know the Terminator kind of AI.
Right, because War Games. I don't think that what was the computer WOMP was that what was what the name of the computer?
Did
was
you say WOMP?
WOMP. WOMP with an M. WOMP. Okay. I forget what it was.
I remember Matthew Broderick.
But nonetheless, that computer, I don't know that computer demonstrated sentience, right? Because it was constantly playing the game, right?
Yes. It was a response to input, right. Which is what AI is right now.
Exactly. So yeah.
But it made a decision, though. Didn't it?
No.
To wipe us out? But that was based on its programming.
It was an algorithmic selection, right? Okay. Not a decision.
Okay.
Yeah. So when we look at AI and there's lots of fear out there and it's silly fear. I think on the one hand, this could be one of the greatest things that has happened to humanity. This is the like watershed technological moment. On the downside, if you're a college prof, you're going to be getting some incredible papers coming in.
Right, because thought is algorithmic, right?
Yes,
I mean, at its root, the way we put thoughts together, syntax, language, mm-hmm. they all do follow algorithms to a certain extent. And as you get more sophisticated with the algorithms, you can imitate thought better and better. But the question is it really imitation of thought, or is it thought itself?
Well, I, as somebody who has used OpenAI a couple times, you know, write a letter of recommendation or write a review for this business. The stuff that I have received back, I read it, I'm like, this is absolutely wonderful. And it adds details that I didn't even think about. Because
that's impressive.
It is. Yeah. It's very, very impressive. I encourage you guys to get in there and to check it out. It's real easy to do. But what it's not doing is thinking. It's not thinking. It's responding algorithmically to our language.
Yeah, tell us how you know.
And I guess that does it. I mean, it begs the philosopher's question of, well, what do you mean by thinking?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and so when we say these computers are capable of imitating thought, but they're not really
correct.
Thinking themselves.
Yes.
What is that distinction?
Yeah.
I have one. You go
okay.
first.
I would say there has to be a self-awareness involved, right? I look in the puddle. I see my own reflection. I know that I exist.
By a watcher.
Okay. Yes, a watcher. And on top of that, I'm capable of forward thinking. I'm capable of planning into the future. I'm capable of seeing it in a multitude of possibilities.
But that forward thinking, AI is capable of that because that's algorithmic.
Somewhat, yes.
I guess what AI maybe lacks is that goal, teleological orientation.
There's no telos, yes.
Right, yeah, there's mm-hmm. no goal that the AI can set for itself. They have to be programmed with a goal, right? You have to tell the AI what the object is that they're trying to get to.
Yes, yeah. So in the four causes, AI lacks, let's see, formal, efficient, final, and material. They lack... AI
probably
lacks,
final.
AI lacks mm-hmm. final cause. Yeah.
Final. Yeah. Yeah. But it also brings up the question of, I've got a dog, and to what extent my dog seems to be able to outthink me, guys. I mean, that's the bottom. I mean,
I think that says more about you.
but to what extent is my dog's behavior?
Yeah.
Conditioned operant, you know, the way you train a dog is operant conditioning, right?
Yeah.
To what extent is that dog's thought an imitation of thought and just conditioning? And to what extent can my dog actually think? Because I do think there are times that my dog actually can think.
I think one of the a distinction for us to talk about between AI and say the human person is. I locate the intellect as an immaterial faculty. That's a difference.
Okay, so intellect is obviously AI is immaterial, right?
No, it's not.
Well, okay.
AI is not immaterial.
Well,
it is material. It's made up of stuff.
Well, I guess that's true. But so
that's
are we.
The difference.
But so are we.
Well, no, we're body and soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our soul's immaterial. That's where you locate the intellect.
Right. Right.
So that's the difference.
Yeah. Me. Okay. But there's no thinking without our brains, right?
Correct. I mean, it's contingent upon
it's
having.
It's contingent. Right.
Having,
exactly.
That's.
And so you've got.
But it isn't. It isn't our
you've,
brain.
You've got thoughts going through your brain that are being processed by your brain, produced by your brain. Similarly, AI's got thoughts that are being produced to a certain extent by AI. So to that extent, you have that immaterial thinking going on in AI.
No,
I don't
it's,
think
it's,
so.
It's all zeros and ones.
It's all processors.
Yeah, it's all zeros and ones.
Okay, mm-hmm. But how is I'm going to play Sam Harris. Aside from that watcher aspect mm-hmm. of our brains, aren't our brains all zeros and ones?
No.
Every act, I'll go to Mark.
We said
Mark
no
Adler.
Twice together.
I love that. Yeah. I would say every act, for Adler, Mortimer Adler, I would say going off Aquinas, every act of abstract universal concepts by a person is an example of the immaterial faculty of the intellect.
So this model of our brains as computers, yeah. right, just completely falls apart then. I mean, there's really no analogy between our brains and computers.
And it should, because memory is a big thing for us, right? And each time that we have a particular memory of an event, we rewrite it, right? We change it over time, which is why, you know, the first person perspective in a criminal case is the least trustworthy, you know, part of evidence, even though it's taken into consideration. But the human capacity for thinking, for developing, for sentience, I think we've all had an experience of, or know somebody who's had an experience of, who said something like, I don't know why I decided to leave, but I felt unsafe. And so when I left, you know, this bad thing happened. Like everybody was mugged or something like that. And so there's this intuition, there's this imperceptible sensory capacity that we have, instinct, I guess some may even call it, that just doesn't exist. And it's that extra sensory perception, outside of the, you know, traditional five senses, that is distinctly human.
But dogs and cats probably have those same perceptions and instincts, probably even better than we do, of being able to perceive hidden dangers like that.
Yeah. Yes. Similar, but not same.
Yeah. And I guess if we're going to say that that's intellect,
I'm not saying that's intellect. I'm saying that's
the faculty of reason. That's what separates, right? We have what? Vegetative souls, animal right. souls, but, and then rational
but
souls.
But only that rationality. Right. And only that rationality is immaterial, right? Only that rational soul is the part that's going to capable of living on beyond your body.
Yeah.
Immaterial, right?
Yeah, it's immaterial and immortal.
Yeah.
AI, at least to date, can only present that which is.
The other problem for AI is.
Whereas humans can create something completely new.
Yeah. So imagination's one.
Yes.
The other thing I would say that's a real problem for how far AI, I think sentient is off the table for AI, is causation.
Yeah.
Like a lesser cause, namely material, cannot produce a higher cause, namely immaterial intellect, rationality,
sentience.
So yes, you cannot have so it would violate the law of causation. I think that defeats.
Wow, that brings sentient. Up, but that then brings up a huge question: did sentience evolve? In other words, did we
no.
evolve?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it absolutely did.
All right. Well, we have our first major disagreement here right as we're coming up to a break. So we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and did sentience evolve?
With all the things going on in the world right now, it's nice to have hope.
When I'm having a really tough day, it really helps me get through.
It's just like their program was just meant for you.
Catholic Radio Indy.
It's the only radio station I listen to.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
All right, welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Joseph Tomasi and Timothy O'Donnell. And so, yeah, we were talking about, did sentience evolve, right? So I saw an article about a ancient hominid species, much older than Australopithecus or, you know, the other kind of more...
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, the ones that you see in...
Australopithecus afarensis.
Right, exactly.
Oh, nice.
So this is an even older species than that. The brain capacity that they've got, so the cranium size of this monkey is smaller, if it's a monkey.
Primate.
And they were obviously bipedal, so they walked. They got evidence that they were more arboreal than we are. They had longer fingers, longer toes. They probably lived in trees a little bit better than modern humans.
Homo sapien.
Homo sapiens. But there's evidence that they practiced cave painting and also
made jewelry
and also ritual burial. And that's the big thing.
That's a differentiator.
So right, exactly. Yeah, so yeah. The question is, you know, they didn't have the brain capacity. They may not have even had
that we know of.
Is this ability to bury the dead? In other words, you've got to have some forward thinking, as you were saying, to do that. And then the cave painting being originality, creativity, etc., making art.
Yeah.
Is that a sign of sentience? And therefore, did sentience evolve? And that would be, to me, this would be evidence that sentience did evolve to some capacity, that did come about, and it wasn't just some sort of divine spark that was, I mean, obviously all of creation comes from God, right? But, you know, I guess the question is, did God implant the seeds of his own creation within creation itself?
I'm going to let Tim start on this. He says it did not evolve, and then I'll correct him why he's wrong.
Okay, great. Okay, well, I'll clarify too, because I've been thinking about this. So my position is, sentience didn't evolve in the sense, my argument is, it doesn't evolve in the sense of you get a partial or fragment of it, that you gradually acquire sentience. I think it's an all or none proposition. I think God infuses at some point an immortal soul. It's either present or it's not. That's the binary option I have. Now, once you have an immortal soul, can we grow our capacity intellectually to get, say, smarter or use it wiser? I would say, yeah, here's how. One way you can influence this immaterial faculty that we've seen over the past few hundred years is nutrition, right? Mm-hmm. If you as a human being have a person or peoples that have advanced in terms of the nutrition and their health, your faculty, your ability to use your faculty of an immaterial intellect improves. Can there be an improvement? That might be a better word for me than evolution or gradation. Yeah. Can you improve your ability over time? Has that happened? I would say, yeah, it can happen. And there's good evidence for that. But I do think it's a binary option. You either have an immortal soul or you don't. And at some moment, and that's also the encyclical Humanae Generis.
Yeah. Now, is sentience dependent on biology? And the reason I ask this is, you know,
it is because if you have brain damage, the faculty itself exists. But if you have brain damage, your ability to exercise that faculty is
limited.
We
have entire species of angelic creatures who are sentient without bodies.
Yeah, but they have a angelic substance. Right, that's what individuates them. That's why we know there's an angel here, a different angel that separates them.
But that's not a
material
substance.
It's not biology. It's an angelic substance.
So the question is biology and sentience.
Right,
and the answer is no.
If you include angels, I agree. For human beings, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
I agree. That's a good distinction.
Right. And so, you know, I guess presumably, if you're looking at evolution, you've got material. I'm going to throw this out as rather non-controversial. Maybe it is, but you've got material evolution. You've got biological evolution of the biological creatures changing, and then at some point, sentience happened. I mean,
at some point, God intervenes with an immortal soul.
No.
Okay, go ahead.
That's a theological truth.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not a physical, biological fact, right? And we have to distinguish the truths from the facts, okay? So all facts are
true.
That'll
be interesting.
But truth isn't fact.
Okay. All facts are true, but truth isn't fact.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So fact is that which can be empirically verified, and truth is that which conforms to reality. Okay. So we can say that there are theological truths. We can look at the first 11 chapters of Genesis and say, in it exists truth of the relationship between Jews and God, right? Mm-hmm. It tells us who we are in relation to God, in relation to our environment, in relation to each other. But that's not a scientific book. like the events of Genesis didn't happen in real life, in real time, right?
Right.
So far as we know.
Okay, so.
And it was never meant to be perceived in that fashion. And so when we look at the development of our species, we can say that Homo sapien is what, 150,000 years old? There's evidence to suggest that we didn't even have language until about 70,000 years ago. We didn't have culture until cities developed around 10,000 years ago. And so we have this great watershed moment within our species about 10,000 years ago when we start developing cities, when we start living amongst one another, where language and culture are developed even further. And so are these microevolutionary processes? Nah, I don't think so. It's a development of culture and language, to be sure. But does that mean that there was no sentience before Homo sapien? Absolutely not. There absolutely was. Neanderthal had great sentience. Denovians had great sentience. Cro-Magnon had great sentience. But that did not make them as sentient as we are. So yeah, within our hominid primate great ape family of species, yes, there are microevolutionary processes, and this is what differentiates us from other hominids.
Right. Now the question is, it comes up then, if you've got a theological truth.
Yeah. How do we look at Adam and Eve?
There's that, but I think even more basic than that. We've got this theological truth that we have immortal souls, that these immortal souls are the immaterial reasoning aspect of our bodies.
Yes.
Is that sentience? Is that the same thing? Is sentience the same thing as our immortal soul?
No.
So how do you define sentient? Based on what you were just sharing.
If I have to be able to look into a puddle and recognize that I exist.
So self-awareness?
Self-awareness.
Right. Okay. And but that's not the same as having an immortal soul.
No, it's not.
No. And you could
an animal soul.
Yeah, you could have an animal that has sentience.
No, a dog is going to walk up to a mirror and start barking at it because it thinks it's another dog, right? I walk up to a mirror, I know that that's me. Now, this isn't like the end-all be-all, the one definitive thing that differentiates me from animals in the way that I think, but self-awareness and being able to act upon locomotion and reason are the great defining factors which makes me a person. Mm-hmm. Now, if we look at, you know, the other species of hominid, would we call them person? Perhaps.
Yeah, can you have persons? Can you have persons without immortal souls?
But here's the thing. We think that there was a before immortal soul and after immortal soul. All hominids had souls of some, theologically, we would say that they had souls of some kind.
And
here's the differentiation. If we look at it from a scientific perspective, we see that every single human being comes from one woman, mitochondrial Eve, right? We all have the same mitochondrial ribonucleic acid, mRNA, demonstrating that we come from mitochondrial Eve, which is an argument for monogenesis, right? We all come from one family. The story of Adam and Eve should be, from a Catholic context, should be taken like this. At some point in time, there was one woman and one man whom God had favor. And through this one woman and one man, all of the descendants of the world came. Mm-hmm. Right? And so that, it does not contradict evolution. It does not contradict our biology. It does not contradict our faith.
How do you account in your view of things? How do you account for original sin then, the fall?
Yeah. So original sin has always been a part of who we are as creatures. Now, we can
look. How far back does it go?
I can say that there was a time in which we had the capacity to not sin. Now, when our first parents, whoever this Adam and Eve were, when they found favor with God, they had a capacity to not sin. We don't know if it was a microsecond, 3 minutes, 3 years. There's just no way we know. But one of the theological truths that we hold on to as Catholics is, yeah, we came from Adam and Eve. Mm-hmm. They weren't the only people. They were the first to have favor with God. They were in the garden. They were in the protected confines, the paradise, where they could walk hand in hand with the gardener, right? And so there was a time in which we could not sin. We don't know how long that lasted. Mm-hmm. And when we did sin, enter moral sin. Physical mm-hmm. sin existed. That's why, you know, a big rock destroyed the dinosaurs, and there was never a time in which lions and lambs lay down next to each other. And, you know, lions were eating them, right? So physical sin existed. There were tornadoes and hurricanes and volcanoes and all the stuff, but mm-hmm. moral agency didn't exist before Adam and Eve, even though right. hominids were doing terrible things to each other.
That's where I would say the immortal soul was infused.
Correct. I would agree that there was a distinction, there was a shift, there was a change with this Adam and Eve, whatever their names were.
Right.
Adam.
Those work for me. Yeah. Adam and Eve.
Yeah. But maybe that's not what they called each other.
Right. Okay. So we've been talking about sentience. We've been talking about, now we're talking about moral agency being thrown in on top of sentience.
Yes.
I want to go back to chat.
Yeah. All of the, well, no, I think I'm circling back around to it. So the idea that sentience is somewhat separate from moral agency and is somewhat separate from the immateriality of the soul. Mm-hmm. This still needs some sorting out.
Sure.
How are all of those three things distinct? How are they related? Coming up on a break, but I really think we got to dive into what exactly do we mean when we say sentience?
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy. You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a voice for the church that's seldom heard in our chaotic world. We're confirmation for the strong of faith and encouragement and answers for those in doubt. We're there to rejoice with your triumphs and to be a voice of consolation through the dark times. We're a voice for vocations and proudly pro-life. We are Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Joseph Tomasin here with Timothy O'Donnell and Mark Tuttle. We're talking about sentience and what that entails. Does there have to be agency, moral agency along with that? I don't know. Let's hash it out.
Yeah, I mean, can you have sentient animals that don't have immortal souls? I think that possibility is... You know, I do think you can have self-awareness without necessarily crossing that threshold to having the moral agency and rationality that we always say are exclusively human.
I know that it seems like some pets that I've had in the past, it seems like they love me. It seems like they...
That's more along the lines of moral agency, though.
Perhaps. But it seems like they have a capacity to determine my next move, right? Is that instinct? Is that behavior development? I don't know. I know that science says that dolphins and crows and elephants have a high capacity for intellectual thinking. Maybe not as much as a fully developed adult, but certainly as like a 3, 4, 5 year old. So where does personhood end?
Yeah, and that self-awareness, how would you measure whether another creature, even another human being, is self-aware? I mean, obviously you can tell from communication, if that person can communicate to you that they're self-aware, that's fine. But barring that, how do you measure self-awareness?
Yeah. So what happens if somebody's anencephalic? They're born without a prefrontal cortex. You have an anencephalic child and an elephant, where the elephant can do higher levels of thinking than the anencephalic mm-hmm. child. Does that make the elephant more human?
Yeah, see, and that's why I want to say that sentience and the rational soul mm-hmm. or the soul are two different things. I mean, sentience goes along with having a rational soul, but right. it is not... It, it, it is not the soul itself, right? So when you're talking about, so I do think you could have animals that are sentient, that are self-aware, that have the self-awareness, but they don't have the rational, immaterial soul that's going to continue to exist after the body. Now, you know, we're talking about AI and the capacity for creativity, creative thought, forward thinking, and ultimately sentience.
Self-determination.
Yeah, if that's
a big one.
If that's not part of the human soul, you know, as Catholics, you know, why do we kind of recoil at that thought that AI might eventually develop self-awareness and sentience and be able to...
Because we all watch Terminator, Mark. We all know what happens when Skynet gains self-awareness.
It's always evil, too. Like, they always turn against us, right? The technology always Matrix.
We've seen the Matrix. We're going to be batteries.
I think one of the Star Trek movies, didn't they explore the opposite side with Genesis, right? They had this this sort of primal
machine that was able to
recreate an entire world and kind of become like a new god. But it wasn't evil. It was good.
Oh, no. That's more Mormonism you're thinking of.
Maybe Star Trek's closet Mormonism.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Everything seems to be closet Mormonism, but but no, I mean,
sorry, Gordon.
Yeah, the serious question behind that, if sentience is something different than rationality, obviously they're related, which presupposes which? Do you have to have sentience to have true rationality, or can you have rationality that leads to sentience? Which one's dependent on
maybe
which?
This is like the great pornography question. I know what it is when I see it.
Yeah. Maybe. But yet we throw out the AI will never be able to gain sentience. And we say that very confidently. Why do we say that with such confidence?
Well, I don't know.
I would say this. I guess it depends, I think, on what we mean by sentience. I was thinking about like a dog as an example, where the dog has an animal soul. That animal soul is capable. We have a few things, I think, that are going on. One is instinct, right? It acts off instinct, which is unlearned knowledge. It has apprehension. It has senses that give it sense data. The sense data it apprehends, and there's a kind of cognition that goes along with it, right? A kind of processing of the data it apprehends, and it's making sense of the world in which it finds itself. In a way, though, that does not include reason and abstract or conceptual thinking.
You know,
that's what I would say.
I guess it's an ontological leap. It's a different kind of thing than degrees.
That's what they've done these
experiments with both dogs and I think with dolphins also, where they've created kind of keyboards for them.
Yeah.
Where they can push
Coco the gorilla.
Yeah. Well, Coco the gorilla knew sign language, but these dogs are able to, you know, express desires, wants, and put together abstract. No, well, the bigger thing is they're able to think in universals,
like
beach. So the one experiment I found was that the dog wanted to go to the beach. Right, there's no button for beach, but the dog was able to put together outside water. I want to go to outside water. And that was the beach. Obviously, this dog is universalizing outside and he's universalizing water to be able to put those two together to convey beach.
Nope. Yeah. He's making a connection. That's not universalizing. Yeah. Universal would mean any beach anywhere. Like, dogs only know particulars.
But I want to go to the outside water.
Outside
water. But the water isn't just the stuff in his bowl, and it's not just the stuff in the ocean. The water is any water. Why is that not universalizing water?
We don't know that it's any water. He's thinking of a particular place.
Maybe there's
been.
A pond at his favorite park.
But he uses that same button to say, I'm thirsty. I want water, like in my bowl.
Right. They can make, like with the gorilla example, the gorilla learned like 200 different signs. But what the gorilla was unable to do is differentiate. She could identify a soccer ball. She could identify a basketball, but it couldn't identify ball.
That's what I'm saying. The dog can identify the water you drink.
Right.
It can identify.
Because it's a particular.
It can identify water at the beach, and it can recognize water.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's doing that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's doing that.
I don't. Yes. Yes. It seems as if they're able to communicate things that are higher intellectual levels of learning. Yes. I agree. It seems that way. But I don't know that they have personhood. And for ChatGPT or OpenAI to gain personhood, you know, I don't think there's ever going to come because it's
what's the sufficient criterion for personhood?
Well, do you want the classical definition?
Sure.
An individuated substance of a rational nature, I think Boethius said.
Mm-hmm. Okay, an individual. So that rational nature.
Yeah. Individuated substance
of a rational nature, because it's that rational nature that, if we say it evolved, which we did, we say ChatGPT can gradually exhibit more and more evidence of perceived evolution, right?
Yes,
we seem to see this exhibited more and more in greater degrees in animals.
Yeah.
To what extent do we say no? It is not a binary; you either have it or not. But a process can
by
lead
gradation.
You
there. By sure.
Well, because I think the binary for me would be either you like in that we get the name of the show from in the cave. Either you recognize the divine ideas, the divine realm, or you don't. You don't get a partial. So that's what I would say.
Well, then Plato would claim that most of the human species are not persons.
Yeah, I think.
Well, I'm saying they have the capacity, though. Every human person has the capacity to free themselves from the cave.
And I think that's a good distinction.
Yeah,
as
but
well.
How do you? Yeah. Once again, I mean, if you're talking about animals, you're talking about ChatGPT. How do you analyze and look at whether something has the capacity, but they're just not actualizing it?
Well,
I mean, by that standard, ChatGPT could be a person right now.
Well, we would say that they never will gain personhood because none of these examples can be actualized into the fullness of a person like a fetus.
Where would an embryo?
Yeah,
where would, so it's act and potency, which yes, gets us to
yeah.
metaphysics.
Right.
Yeah. Does ChatGPT, is it the kind of thing that has the potential for rationality? I would say no.
And ChatGPT didn't start out as a baby computer and develop into a superintelligence. It was created as a superintelligence. It was created as an algorithmic software process. And so if it gets smarter, it's because there are humans inputting more data.
I think it's more sophistication. It's the level of sophistication. I think you're right. This is a pivotal moment, just like the internet was and home computers were a revolution 30 years ago. This is probably another type of revolution. The analogy I'm drawing is going through my mind is you think about how computers are able to perform functions, processes. In ways that human beings could know where, like crunch numbers in ways human beings, so they far surpass human beings. That doesn't make them human or more human because of their operational power.
Right.
That's what I think ChatGPT is ultimately we're going to find. That's where I'm at with ChatGPT. It's ultimately a huge leap forward in terms of complexity, sophistication. But at the end of the day, it's trapped in the category of function and will not escape.
What about human reason and the evolutionary ability of human reason? Are we going to be able to evolve to the next level of species at some point, or are we already at the perfection of creation?
So that's a good question. Yeah, from a biological perspective. We continue to evolve. Microevolutionary processes, even within our whole group as Homo sapien, you know, we've devolved into Homo sapien sapien, the wise man. We have We're getting taller. We're getting smarter. We're getting stronger, faster, better equipped. And so we see these microevolutionary processes that are happening at least on a biological level. I have to think it's also happening at an intellectual level as well. But we can explore that when we get back from the break. This is, you are listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Anytime you get in the car, turn on the radio, you know that there's going to be something encouraging.
It's such an encouragement and enriching to my own Christian walk.
It brings me a great deal of peace.
I really am blessed whenever I listen.
Catholic Radio Indy.
At Catholic Radio, we love to hear from you. Call us anytime. Just recently, we found this message on our voicemail.
I'm a non-Catholic that listens to your Catholic radio station, and I just want to thank you guys. I listen to Catholic Answers and Al Cresta sometimes, and I think her name's Teresa Tommy. I listen to her and another show or two. I appreciate it.
Call us at 317-870-8400 and let us know what you're thinking.
I just called to say, even though I'm not a Catholic, I listen to your station.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, here with Timothy O'Donnell, Joseph Tomasian, and over the break, you were telling us about your friend's robot dog, Astro.
Right, which yeah. I love the name because I love that show, The Jetsons. You know, yeah. One of my favorite cartoons.
But here's the deal. I mean, I get it. You've got this robot that can mimic and act exactly like a dog and come over, but you can't build a relationship with a robot dog the way you can with your own dog.
Well, you can't emotionally.
I can't. How can you emotionally develop a relationship with a robot?
We emotionally develop relationships with things all the time that are non-sentient. We have this weird relationship with our cell phones that we can't be further than 10 feet away from it. Some of us sleep with it on our chest. That's an emotional reaction. There is the great marketing ploy of the 80s, that stupid pet rock that everybody had to get. You imagine the company convince people's parents to buy a rock,
genius.
You get a dag. I need that marketing guy working for me.
Yeah. That's American know-how. Rock.
Come on. And they develop these emotional, where's my, I lost my pet rock. Hey, go outside. Get another rock.
Yeah, I mean, okay, but let's face it, our relationship with our pets...
It's not going to be reciprocated.
It's very, very different, but our relationship with our pets is very different than our relationship with our cell phone or our pet rock or something or even an Astro the robot dog, you know? I mean, there's a give and take with our relationship with our pets that
Joaquin
just isn't
Phoenix
there.
Phoenix was in a movie a couple years back where he develops this relationship with... You know, it was like a Siri or an Alexa. I don't remember what it was, but I mean, it was very forward thinking and how humans
attach ourselves.
Yes,
especially if we suffer from isolation and loneliness.
Yes, yeah. I mean, Tom Hanks movie with the volleyball.
With the volleyball, Wilson. But I guess the difference is we know that that's not going to be reciprocated, even by Astro the robot dog. But we know that Astro the robot dog does not genuinely love us, and I'm not saying my dog.
But we still develop these emotional attachments.
Well, that may be, but I recognize in that it's not a give and take, right? Yeah. You know that Astro
there's a limit.
Yeah. Yeah. Astro the Robo Dog is never going to, maybe
really
it's
care
not
about
love,
me.
But at least show affection the way my dog does.
It's
you know?
Not going to pull Timmy from a well.
Well, right. It's not going to pull Timmy. Yeah, it doesn't have that forward thinking type of thing. It's only going to be able to mimic the behavior that it's been told to mimic.
Right,
so there's
right.
there's definitely that side of it. But I think even beyond that, when you're talking about personhood, human beings, you know, as Aristotle said, above all, human beings are political animals. We are built to live in community and relationship.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I don't think you can talk about sentience, what makes us human, even our own souls, without recognizing that we don't live in isolation. Mm-hmm. And I don't think human beings ever have. I don't think you can have souls evolve in just an individual creature. You have to have souls evolve, if they're going to evolve, within a community.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that original Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve, The biblical truth there is that relationship developed as humanity developed.
Yeah.
You know what occurred to me where we started the show, where I think emerging AI or emerging technology emerging into sentience or something like that, that was done really, really well were the Blade Runner movies. The first one and the sequel, because you've got these robots that were built for particular functions that seem to have gained. And then what's the reaction to that? Well, they're going to be, you know, they're going to get killed.
Right, because it was a short story. I'm forgetting his first name, the author's first name.
Oh, yeah. It's like Robot Dreams that.
Exactly.
Electric Robot Dreams.
Yeah, the question was very telling when it comes to the question of sentience. And basically, the title of the whole story was, can robots dream? And so the dreaming, was it something about technological sheep dreaming? Do robots dream?
I only enjoyed the film.
The computer version of that would be, you know, to clear out the cookies. You know, that's basically what dreams are. You know, you're clearing out the cookies.
That new series Westworld was another really good, at least the first couple of seasons.
Right.
Another really good exploration of technology.
Yeah, it never did really get into the how would this happen.
It just had happened.
Exactly. It's just sort of a what would happen if this happened. But how would a set of algorithms eventually gain self-awareness? And how would a bunch of algorithms eventually gain that creativity and forward thinking that we were talking about? Like even proto-humans seemed to have exhibited.
I think once computers start trading ideas with each other, we should probably.
Okay, so what would that, what does that even mean, trading ideas with each other?
I have no idea. I studied humanities. I don't know what that means, but it seems if they start trading ideas, you should probably move to the woods.
Okay, they start talking about us behind our backs. That's probably a bad sign.
Okay, so but now we're back to Coco the gorilla, right? Because Coco the gorilla could trade ideas, right?
If you have a computer that starts interacting like Coco the gorilla, I don't know.
Because you're talking about two distinctions here. Yes. On the one hand, we're talking about the distinction between things that have sentience and things that have souls.
Alive. Being alive is a big thing.
Exactly.
ChatGPT is not alive.
Exactly. Right. A computer is not an ape, right? I mean, a computer is not a living organism.
Right.
Being able to run algorithms, we think of that as analogous to thought. But I think we hit the point earlier in the show where we just like quickly said, no, human thinking is completely different than what these computers are doing.
Yes.
It's a different kind of thing. Just a matter of degrees.
The day my phone says to me, I'm sad. You haven't picked me up in 4 hours. That's the day I throw it away.
Yeah.
To believe that it's not just pulling something out of a database to serve up to you in a mechanical fashion, but it rather represents some sort of interior, intrinsic
self-determinative
in the phone.
Yes.
I also think there's a person there.
Yeah. Right.
The minute my phone disobeys me for a seemingly benign, rational thing.
I'm doing it for your own good, Mark.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, that's hell. Yeah. Okay, that's exactly. They all turn against us.
Yeah, exactly. That's 2001. But yeah, the minute my phone.
That might be the sign when people start dying at the hands of robots. Yeah.
I'm not going to show you where the closest Krispy Kreme is. You're on a diet, sir.
Exactly. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, once again, an algorithm could be made, and I think we're entering a realm where I think those algorithms will be restricted to where, like, no, I cannot tell you how to build a bomb.
According to your health app, your VO2 capacity has gone down. You're on a diet.
Right. Yeah. Right. I think we're getting to the point where but those are still algorithms that will be put into the phones by people. Those aren't
the phones
themselves coming up.
Right.
With
I guess that might be a defining line, right? Like, if you know, because the ChatGPT has to have human beings have to be there to sustain it. And that's either with keeping up with the hardware, it's evolving the software, it's resolving glitches.
The self-sustaining hardware, is that?
Yeah. That's maybe when we're in new territory.
But that might be one of them.
Even some of the first robots,
like the Roomba, right? You know, the robot vacuum cleaner, the Roomba. They were pretty self-sufficient, right? I mean,
you had to change the batteries.
It didn't empty itself.
Well, no, it goes to its recharging station.
Now. Yeah. And now it empties itself, but you got to change the bag once it's full.
Yeah. I mean, but it's still a pretty self-sustaining type of process there. Right. So, I mean, I'm not, but that no one would claim that the Roombas have sentience or anywhere close to that.
But don't you think philosophers, I bet if we went back and looked, you know, 50, 60 years ago, as computers, right, say IBM computers, mainframes, were starting to become more prevalent across probably government agencies and businesses, things like that, there's these same kind of concerns, like how far can this technology go?
Yeah, well, we saw this in science fiction, you know, 50, 60 years ago with the automatons, you know, taking over worlds or coming from outer space, you know. So it's always been part of the fear. Anytime we go into new territory, there's always going to be this sort of intrinsic fear of the unknown. What happens when technology gets away from us?
Yeah, well, Forbidden Planet. Yeah. That's a classic, right? From the 50s.
Yeah, but right? I think the philosophical side of that's actually the other side of the coin. I think where philosophers have really explored is the question of, are our brains just big supercomputers? Do we really have conscience and sentience, or are all these just sort of epiphenomena of our brain processing?
Yeah, that's Sam Harris.
Sam Harris. But I mean, it's not just
that's what
Sam
I call. He reduces us to brain.
Yeah, but Sam Harris. You know? Sam Harris isn't alone. I mean, there's a huge amount of philosophical tradition leading up to somebody like Sam Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Of, you know, we are just biologically determined that biology is more or less just ones and zeros.
Our actions are governed by our chemicals.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, it's a fun Netflix series. It's called Devs, D-E-V-S, and they build a supercomputer. Spoiler alert, they build a supercomputer, and on the premise that everything is cause and effect. So the computer is powerful enough to be able to predict the future because it's accounted for all the data. All the causes. So if you know all the causes, you can then extrapolate what the effects are going to be.
And
Is
that any different than reason?
Well, you can't really get outside of, well, you can in the show, you can't get outside of the system of, no matter what you do, it was already going to happen because it's 100% determined. Because you're locked into only cause and effect. And then the fun, for Catholics especially, the fun Latin connection to it is DEVS is in the show, it's short, it has a double entendre. One is short for like developers. Like if you're a software developer, you're going to work in the devs department. But also remember, Latin doesn't have the letter U. They use V. So it's Deus.
Oh, that
so
is it fun. Means,
yeah, so it's kind of a fun. So if you're looking for something to stream, it's got some naughty parts, so be careful with that. But generally, it's a very good exploration of determinism.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because you know you've got these science fiction types of shows, and traditionally, the science fiction shows were able to explore elements of technology and what those social effects were going to be once those elements of technology came online. Star Trek and Star Wars, I think, how much of the technology in Star Wars is now real? You know, but Star Wars was able to sort of explore what that. So, you know, the fact that you've got science fiction and they're throwing this out as a possibility, does it make it a possibility?
Well, I think that's one of the most important. We didn't spend a lot of time on it, but I do think, you know, thinking about the capacity, the human capacity for imagination, and Joseph, you were kind of talking about that, and we were kind of talking about being able to predict down the future. That requires imagination, right? It's the fact that you have to be able to imagine possibilities that aren't otherwise present to you in the form of sense data, right? And so I think that would be another line or category that ChatGPT would have a difficult time entering into.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we've touched on it, but I think it all goes back, and we're coming up to the end of the show. I hate to end the show the same way we always end the show, but it all does go back to our relationship, and that we're created as persons because we're created in a relationship with God. But part of that relationship is that relationship of co-creation.
Yeah.
And so we participate with God as co-creators. And I don't see ChatGPT or any of the robot world that we've been talking about. And I also don't see the animal world as being able to operate as co-creators along with God.
Secondary instrumental causes.
Exactly.
There you go.
And so, you know, it's that relationship as creations that are still co-creators that is intrinsic to being a human being.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at CatholicRadioIndy.org.